Well, hello, everybody. Jim Hackett and Pete Davidson, your fantasy football guys here at WEEI, are back. And guess why? It is NFL Combine time. And my buddy Pete Davidson, hello there, Pete.
What's up, bud? How you doing?
I'm all right, buddy. I'm all right. But it brings us back together, which is three very fat articles on WEEI.com. One of them just went up. A lot of words there. One just went up with the receivers and quarterbacks, and running backs went up a little earlier in the week, like Wednesday this week. So they're all working out down there now. Well, out there, I should say.
And you'll throw some tight ends up tomorrow. That won't be quite as in depth as the other three. You know, definitely got a beat on some of these tight ends. Definitely some good guys coming out.
Well, last year tight ends was a blast because it was such a great class. You know what I mean?
Tight ends stole the show last year.
We spent the whole offseason on tight ends, and we spent a good amount of time during the season and during the show talking about the tight ends.
No, I think I was right on that one.
I think you were. I think you hit that one. You know, relevant again, though, aren't they? With particularly here with all the stories swirling around Mr. Gronkowski, could that potentially become a position of need for the Pats, I guess, is an area to kind of talk about. I think he's going to be back, but that's purely gut instinct. That's all that is.
I mean, you know, the big names are now reporting that he's expected back. So, I mean, unless there's something we don't know about Gronk, I've got to think he's going to be back. But
I think so. I think Fourier hit it well. I don't know if you heard him earlier in the week, but actually the last couple of weeks. But he's like, it's posturing. It's posturing for a new deal. And that makes perfect sense because the guy, to me, and I've said this a bunch of times, I don't only think he's the best tight end in football. I don't only think he's the best tight end that's ever played. I actually think he's the best football player that's ever played. And he deserves to be paid as such. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if I go that far. He's definitely, I think, the best tight end I've ever had the pleasure of watching.
I
would think if Gronk wants more money, it would be as simple as saying, pay me more money.
How much? Yeah, seriously.
I don't know if he really has to go through any public posturing. You know, it's just, you know, you guys will be paying me more, or you will be paying someone else, you know. I suppose, you know, the Patriots might come back with, you know, we won a Super Bowl without you, but I think they're smart enough to know they might have gotten a little lucky there. And Gronkowski's don't grow on trees, period.
Yeah, I don't think there's any tolerance for that BS this time around. But you know what I mean? Like, look at people are trying to make the parallels in terms of, you know, Belichick being a master at leaving, you know, too soon versus too late. And that's all true, but this is a different animal. This is a different animal, and the Patriots moving forward in 2018 and beyond are a different animal. And I'm just saying, don't mess with Gronkowski.
Replacing Lawyer Malloy is not something you can compare, you know, to replacing Rob Gronkowski.
No doubt. The only thing that comes,
Richard Seymour, or anybody else you want to bring up.
Yeah, Seymour, he was the one that he comes a little bit close, but it's not even close to me.
Yeah, I mean, is Seymour even in your top 50 defensive linemen of all time? Probably not. So there you go.
He's probably in that conversation. He's a Hall of Fame guy, but there's a lot of great defensive linemen.
I don't think Richard Seymour will end up in the Hall.
I think he's got a legitimate chance. It wouldn't surprise me if he did, and it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't. And I'm not straddling the fence, even though that totally sounds it. But I think he's got the chops to be there. But that's me.
Yeah, I think at some point
they
only let so many people in off a given team. So I don't know. I don't know how many Patriots ultimately make it. I mean, we know one. We know one Patriot who's a lock.
Brady and Gronk will be there, and I think
Gronk obviously is a lock.
I think Ty Law should be there.
I wouldn't have a problem with Ty Law. You know, career went downhill a little bit early, but heck of a football player
and huge in the big games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Huge.
He wasn't what he was with the Jets. I think he picked off 10 balls for us. So.
Right. Yeah, and Harrison probably. There's a good argument for Rodney Harrison too, I would say, and maybe Matt Light, but we'll see about. He's probably a fringe at best, but there's a lot of candidates there.
The thing with the Patriots is you've got turnover. You know, I mean, obviously Randy Moss,
who's in.
Yeah, so you're definitely going to have your share, but the fact that the early Super Bowl crew got turned over. So it's not like you've got all these guys that were with Brady all the way through the run.
No, for sure,
right. That's what happens when your run lasts 17 15 years or whatever the heck.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
I know.
So, I know very few people have careers like that.
It's funny. I was reading Ty Anderson on WEI.com today, and I actually thought his article, he wrote an article about Gronk from the perspective of a kid who's been watching wrestling for a long time. And he was making, he's like, Gronk will never be in the in the WWE, which I don't know that I agree with. But the case he made.
I don't
made,
think he should.
Well, that's
I think it would be a big mistake for him to do that.
Well, the case he was making is the injuries. You know what I mean? He's like that mat isn't a trampoline. He's like, you know, these guys really get hurt, and this guy's fragile anyway.
It sort of is a trampoline.
Yeah.
I've actually been on it.
You've been in the squared circle?
Absolutely. When I worked at Madison Square Garden, we used to go down and check it out on the day of the fights, and there's a lot of give to that thing, more than you think. But... yeah, I mean, for a guy, if Gronk's going to retire early because he wants to avoid CTE, I don't think working for Vince McMahon is a great career move. You know, maybe a here and there event.
Yeah, no, it was great last year when he did the appearance. I think people dug it.
Yeah.
I think he dug it, and I think the wrestling people dug it. And I think that's the role. You know what I mean?
I mean Gronk certainly has the personality to do it. And
no doubt.
He's got the physicality to do it.
Yep.
I'd certainly think that your average wrestling fan would probably be a Gronk fan, whether they're a Patriot fan or not.
Yep.
Hopefully Gronk doesn't need that kind of money. Hopefully. I think that's the thing when it comes to retirement. You know, it's not like he's Brady where he's been making large money for a long time. What is Gronk, 28?
He's 28. Yeah, it's an 8-year window right now.
Yeah. Right, and I mean, you know, a lot of that was on his rookie deal. So I think he's a guy who probably wants one or two more years at big money. And I think he deserves to be making, you know, whatever the max amount of money for him is. You know, he shouldn't, I don't, you know, for Brady to take a team discount, that's one thing. For Gronkowski to do it, I don't think would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, because he's not going to play until he's 45.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's a player who's been shown his football mortality on many occasions.
Yeah, before he got to the league.
Exactly. Yeah. So, he's really paid his dues. He's really... I don't see how the Patriots could ever ask more out of him than what he's given, so he deserves to be paid.
Yeah, bingo. And bingo was his name-o. And and I think that will sort itself out, but it does bring up an interesting draft, you know, for the Pats, because there's the obvious thirst and need to, you know, refortify at quarterback. Now, whether that has to be this year or next year, that's debatable, depending upon who's there. But
right.
That's there. And then running back. You know, you hit it in your article from Wednesday, Pete. You know, Deion Lewis could go. Rex Burkhead
right.
could go. Gillislee
right.
could go. You know, they re-signed Brandon Bolden, but he's not going to tote it. So there's a lot to talk about in terms of the draft.
Although Bolden sure is a great guy to have lying around, you know.
Yeah, love him.
Like, you can take him out of mothballs, give him 15 carries in a game, and he won't kill you.
Yeah, he'll do something with it. But what they did with him this year is exactly, and in years past, is exactly what you want him for.
Yeah.
Special teams and the occasional, all right, he won't kill us. But
absolutely. He's a big guy with some skill. But, yeah, I mean, look, if Burkhead and Gillislee go, or if Burkhead and Deion go, or if Deion and Gillislee go, that's just going to create a need. And you know what? You know, typical Patriots, this is a great year to have a need at running back.
Yeah. I saw your tweet. You beat me to it by about 20 seconds. I happened to be eating lunch, and I was watching ESPN when Carolina dropped Jonathan Stewart, and I'm like, oh, that's a great guy for the Patriots to pick up. And I went to Twitter, and the first thing I saw was at Rotobon. I was like, oh, you beat me to it. But but that's an absolute typical Patriot signing, and he'd be great. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He does exactly what they need. Be an interesting player.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them picking up him on the super cheap. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a team that could talk Matt Forte out of retirement for one season. It might be New England. There's definitely a lot of guys out there who you can bring in for that, you know, that veteran role, the way they did with Dylan 1 year, the way they tried to do with Fred Taylor 1 year. There's definitely plenty of guys out there who fit that bill. There's some guys in the draft who can maybe not be Deion Lewis, but certainly play in that role. There's plenty of big backs, too. But, you know, I have to say, replacing Burkhead, that's going to be a tough one.
That's my priority. Of all those backs, honestly, and you know, you've talked to me enough on air, in the podcast, live on the phone. I've been saying it for years, as of you. We love Deion Lewis, the both of us, and I think he has just been exceptional. I think he's the best at what he's done in New England, why he was brought in, and so much right. So that he became the lead back. But, you know, that I think the die is cast on that. If I have to save a guy that I think I can save on the team, it's Burkhead to me. That's the guy
yeah.
I want back.
I mean, I'm just sort of also taking a guess at what the money's going to be. I mean, Burkhead, I think, showed enough where somebody out there is going to offer him a raise. I have to think that Deion Lewis, who's proven, you know, to be durable at this point, who held up to, you know, a decent workload last season.
Yeah.
I would think Deion would command a little bit of money to the point where the Patriots aren't going to want to go there.
That's my thought.
I mean, if I'm the Patriots, this could be debated, but I think if I'm New England and I can't afford to keep Amendola and Deion, I think Amendola is the guy I'm going to bring back.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because I think there are alternatives at running back. There are alternatives.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I mean, granted, didn't win the Super Bowl, but if the Patriots had won the Super Bowl, not many more people would have deserved, like, an MVP kind of thing for the playoffs, you know, over Amendola.
I mean, yeah,
I
agree.
Just unbelievable. And that's on the heels of being great in the playoffs before. I mean, this is a guy who just, I mean, you want a big game player. Danny Amendola is a big game player.
Tough to find a better one when it matters. He's been like that his entire time here in New England.
Right, right.
And even when he wasn't favorable, even when he was like the clear third or fourth receiver, he came up with a big third down catch.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, people probably, our regular listeners to our program were probably almost tired of listening to me say, don't overuse Amendola. But, you know, he's just that valuable in the playoffs where I don't want him getting a season-ending concussion or a clavicle or whatever might happen.
Yeah,
he's just too big in the big spot.
Yeah, and you know what? He also... They've been a perfect fit for him and he for them. So,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
They used him perfectly. So if I'm him, and despite whatever the agent might be whispering in his ear, he's got to know. These guys get me. They get my value. They get my usage level. I think he is the priority. And I don't think it's going to be that tough to sign him if you factor in all those things. And if he factors in all those things and his agent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it would depend who his suitors are, I suppose. I mean, if the 49ers came a call in, I don't know, maybe that might interest him.
Yeah.
You know, a team like the Saints maybe could be an interesting team for him. I mean, certainly he doesn't need to go to some bad team to make an extra $1 million. And he's already shown in the past that he's willing to knock $1 million off his salary to stay with the Patriots.
Yeah.
And as I allude to in the article this morning, I think this is a rare situation where the Patriots might bend their own rule to keep a player, just because this is a guy who's bent over backwards to help them with their cap situation. I think everybody looks good if he ends up back in New England happy. I think that's something that you can sell to your entire roster. Like, look, we're not inhuman here. You know,
yep.
You help us, we help you.
Yep.
And this guy's earned his money. I mean, dear Lord, Amendola was easily worth twice what they paid him last year.
No doubt, and he earns it here. Like at 31 years old, and at his size and his past injury history, as durable as he's been the last few years, I don't know how big the financial market will be for him. So pay him here. I think it just makes a lot of sense.
Well, it depends, right? I mean, if there's a team out there ready to win now, they may see Amendola as a person to pay. But, you know, if a team like the Jets is just trying to flex their cap space, I don't think that's something that's going to, you know, appeal to him.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I mean, my gut says he's going to end up on a good team playing with a good quarterback, probably the Patriots.
Yeah, I think so, too. And also, too, for the Patriots, you know, it hasn't been the happiest of times, even though they were, you know, very close to winning another Super Bowl. You know,
right.
The last few months have been publicly tumultuous in terms of the brand and the perception and all that kind of stuff. Keep your glue, guys. Keep your glue, guys. Like, you
it's
know,
pretty
that,
remarkable that the Patriots could be in a bad PR spot given the level of success.
One score away from another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes you wonder just like how much I've been on social media and seen Patriot fans just going after Belichick in ways that just, I don't know. I can't imagine having a coach that good and going after him, you know.
It mystifies me.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk about the Super Bowl. This is the first time we've been on, I think, since the Super Bowl.
I think you're right, yeah.
And you know, whatever. It's water under the bridge at this point. But, you know, you can disagree with any individual thing that the Patriots did, but the idea that Belichick was trying to do anything other than win is crazy.
No doubt about it.
It's just crazy.
I agree with you. I agree with you totally. And you know what? They were beaten. I mean, you know, the reason they lost is their defense, and everyone's got their panties in a bunch about Malcolm Butler. My first instinct is to not agree with it, but we don't know the whole story, and we never will. You know,
sure.
They played pretty well, actually, after the first couple series.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I was going to say that. You know, sure, there's a couple high-profile plays you can look to, but the guy wasn't getting beaten like a dog all game long, like some people say. And if you look at Jeffrey's touchdown, I mean, that was a pretty darn good throw and a pretty darn good catch.
It was a perfect throw.
Yeah, so, you know, and look, I think sometimes we forget that how much the details matter to the Patriots, and I don't know what their play calling was going to be in the Super Bowl, but clearly they had a plan. It was something they were installing throughout the week. Butler wasn't able to participate in it. You know, right or wrong, I think they had their reasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like, look, if Brady doesn't get sacked to lose the football on that last possession, this is all like a non-story.
I know, they win. I know.
Right. The Patriots were in really good position to win that game.
Yep.
And
despite their defense fledgling the entire game.
Yeah, but the Eagles' front seven stepped up. They got to, I mean, you and I have said it a million times. You want to beat the Patriots? Get to Brady. Well, in the big spot, they got to Brady.
Yeah, and also what I've been saying, and I actually said this before the game, is you got to coach with some balls. You have to be Seabiscuit. You have to be Rocky. You have to go for it, man. And so many teams in Jacksonville 2 weeks before, you know, did the exact opposite. No doubt that they lost. And give Peterson tons of credit, man. He went for it in a big way all game, and they won.
No doubt. I'm not going to take back anything I said about Nick Foles in terms of the way he was playing when they first put him in there.
Yeah.
And really, up and through the Falcon playoff game, he did not play that well. But against the Vikings and the Patriots,
he flipped the script. Yeah,
that was the Nick Foles we saw a couple of years ago when he was playing for Chip Kelly and he made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
it was that guy.
Yeah.
So kudos to the Eagles for putting in game plans and for getting him ready and for calling the plays that he had confidence in. And, you know, and it was, I have to say, it was pretty impressive, and I'm sure most of the people have seen it, you know, when Foles is running to the sidelines and telling him what play he wants to run, and the coach is like, yeah, let's run that. I mean, that's impressive.
That's what good coaches do. Good coaches look at the players that they have. How can we get the most out of this? Let's not try to make this guy.
Well, you're absolutely right.
Wentz. He's not Carson Wentz.
But being free and easy and loose when the stakes are that high. I mean, we've seen it twice now in recent history. Sean Payton with the onside kick leading off the second half, and that play they call on the goal line. These are moves where if you are wrong, you can lose your job.
Yeah.
And they're doing it like it's nothing. That's a sign of a coach you want.
Yeah, no doubt.
Opinion.
No doubt.
You
know? I'm duly impressed with that guy. Duly impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is against a team that you have to assume is going to be prepared for things.
Yep.
So, look, I mean, that was a good Super Bowl. Two good football teams showed up, and
it's
they
a great
both
Super Bowl.
Both
yeah.
played well. It took on, and you know, sometimes fans see what they want to see, but I mean, how many times have we seen these? A football game takes on a personality, okay? And that was an offensive football game. The Super Bowls have been like that a lot in recent memory, where it's just an offensive game, and especially in the second half. As Teddy Bruschi says, these teams get gassed, you know, and he's right. How many times have we seen big defensive stops in the fourth quarter of Super Bowls? They're few and far between.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, unless it's the Falcons collapsing, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought it was one of the best Super Bowls I've ever seen.
It was very entertaining, and as a Patriots fan with a significant amount of gray hair on the sides, you know, it doesn't like you know I always take stock of the fan in me, you know, of where I am versus where we once were. So it doesn't sting as much. But there's a lot of people out there that follow the Patriots that don't have the history that dates back with all the shit that we had to deal with as Patriots right. fans and Boston sports fans. Their lens is completely different. And people, I'm devastated. I mean, what are you devastated about? Been in 8 Super Bowls, you know, in the Brady Belichick era. You've won 5 of them. Like, Aaron's
right.
Like, come on. I mean, what are you devastated about?
Steal a line from Bill Murray. It's not like old Yeller got shot.
Exactly. Look, I wanted to win as much as the next guy, but, you know,
sure.
you know, come on. It was a great game. And the big thing to me is, like, I like sustainability of success. And I've got some big-time concerns on the defensive side of the ball. Now, we're going to get into offense, where I think they also have some needs. You know, look at if Dante Scarnecchia doesn't come back, suddenly offensive line becomes an issue because I think
isn't Scarnecchia back? Didn't that get confirmed?
Yeah, he is coming back. But, if he doesn't, now that's an issue. You know what I mean?
Right.
Running back could be an issue. Tight end, theoretically, could be an issue.
If I'm the Patriots, I'm looking at... If I can do anything to improve the offensive line, that maybe is where I'm going to spend.
It's always a factor. And by the way, you know, Nate Solder has been a very, very good, solid, productive left tackle. But he's not perfect, and there's a lot of gaps on that line. So, again, when I had that conversation with Sebastian Vollmer back in the preseason of 2017, I asked
right.
him straight up. You should have seen. He was in the studio with me. You should have seen his face. He's like, it was basically like, Jim, it was like when a grandparent talks to you, like kind of like, you know, gives you the straight scoop of how life is. He was just like, this guy is, he just makes you better in every way. And,
yeah,
you know, no affront to Dave Andrews or Marcus Cannon or Shaq Mason or any of these guys. Are they as good without him? I don't know.
Listen, you know, the Jets had a special teams coach, Mike Westhoff.
I remember.
And there's nobody like him. And when we lost him, you knew that the special teams were going to go down, and they did. And it's just some coaches are just that good. And Scarnecchia is one of those guys. And, you know, when Belichick keeps you around for that long, it's not a coincidence.
Scarnecchia was in the Rod Rust coaching staff. And for
correct.
Those who don't remember, they were 1-15.
Right.
So this guy
right,
knows what he's doing.
Right. So with any time a coach comes in and keeps some of the pre-existing furniture, that's a nod. That's
good
a,
furniture. Yeah.
Right. We're going to keep that guy. You know, I've got my guy, but we'll keep that guy. And Belichick obviously smart enough to do those things. One guy I think the Pats could look at, depending, I don't know what their needs are in the internal part of the line, but if Weston Richburg can be fit into their cap situation, I'd consider going after him, stealing from the Giants. Of course, on the Giants, I want to find a way to keep him. The Giants, people are talking about them losing Richburg and Pugh. Man, if they do that, that's a...
Dogs loose, yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. But anyway, let's jump in and do some combine stuff.
Yeah, I want to do some...
Or some rookie stuff.
Let's do some rookie and some combine stuff. Just one more thought on that, just to kind of plant the seed, right? As we transition into the skill positions, that's what we do. Pete and I are the fantasy football guys here at EEI. So we're going to get into running backs and then some high-level QBs, maybe some receivers. That article's up on EEI.com right now. It's great, by the way. But my sense is the Patriots have a lot of holes to fill. And I think for the positions that we would normally talk about here, you're going to see a lot of free agent signings, a lot of veterans fill those. They're going to spend their draft capital on defense. They're going to get younger, they're going to get faster, and they're going to get more talented, period.
I can see that. Hey, yeah. Listen, when it comes to the skill positions in this draft, there's really, you don't need to attack them early anyway.
It's a depth lot.
Oh, you're going to be able to get quality running back prospects in the 5th and 6th round. I'd be surprised if that's not the case. And the drop-off in receivers, say from round 3 to round 6, is going to be negligible. So the Patriots can rely on their scouting departments to take the right players if they're looking at a receiver, which I doubt, and if they're looking at a running back, which, you know, by the time we get to the draft, I think that picture will be relatively clear.
Yeah, no doubt. But this is this looks like it to be a deep class, maybe lacking some star power, but lots of depth at the skills. So the running backs are going today at the combine.
Yeah. There is star power on the running back side.
Yes, there is.
I don't see a ton of star power on the receiver side.
Yeah, but so they're talking about Barkley as maybe being one of the best players to come out of a draft in recent memory.
Yeah, he's an interesting one. I don't know if I love him as much as consensus. I definitely like him. I think the thing about him that makes him special is actually his receiving ability. Mm. He's an outstanding receiving running back.
That's important now, you know.
Yeah, in today's NFL, it's huge. He's sort of hit and miss as a ball carrier. I mean, when he hits, it's ridiculous. I mean, he's a home run hitter without question, and he's a big 233-pound dude. Mm. So, I mean, this is just finding a comp player to Saquon Barkley is very difficult. He's sort of a really new thing. But, you know, he does leave you wanting sometimes if you're just looking for a guy who's going to grind it out as a running back. Mm. He's not that kind of running back. But, you know, if you could put him, you know, if he got like what, if he, you could put him where, you know, Alvin Kamara went last year, if you put him with a guy like Breeze, oh my word, he would just be unbelievable.
Mm. Mm. So his location is going to have a lot to do with his success, like we often talk about, right?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of don't want him to go to Cleveland, although it seems like he will. And the only reason is that Cleveland seems to be going highly conventional, and I think this kid's a little bit unconventional.
Yeah.
I'd rather see him go to a team like maybe the Giants, you know, where you're going to be running, you know, more, you know, out of the Giants will run out of passing formations, and I think they'll be able to do different things with their running back. I think he'd be great there. Not that I think the Giants should take a running back second overall. I don't think they should. But if I'm a team who plays conventional football, I would rather hope that Darius Geis somehow magically slips into the second round than go early on Barkley, personally. Darius Geis is good.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a good running back.
You like what you've seen so far.
Oh, man. And Nick Chubb, my third running back, is just unbelievable.
Running backs just fall out of that.
They get great running backs.
Yeah.
And the two coming out this year are very good. And granted, they play behind a really good offensive line.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, Nick Chubb's been good. He was good in 2014. He was good until he got hurt in 15. Came back from a gruesome knee injury in one season and was still, 2016 Nick Chubb was probably the worst we've seen. He was still very good coming off. I mean, he had a bizarre knee injury, Jim. He actually did every ligament except the ACL.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know that I've ever seen that. I'm sure it's happened somewhere,
What causes that? That's strange because the ACL is like the center of it all.
Very strange injury. He did the PCL, but not the ACL, and he did both of the outside ligaments, the MCL the PCL. Excuse me, the LCL. So, you know, obviously three reconstructed ligaments, and the guy now, when you look at him, he is not far off of his pre-injury form, which is impressive. And you know, the thing that's interesting about Chubb to me is, you've had an ACL reconstruction, so you know.
Yep.
Sometimes that second and third year away from the surgery, you're still getting better. I wonder if Chubb could be even better next year.
We saw it with Deion Lewis, right? I think he was. It was a
I remember warning people about that. Yeah. People not listening to me.
You saw it 18 months before you really saw what we saw in that initial burst before he got hurt. Like, wow, look at this guy.
Anterior cruciate ligaments, and I had an orthopedic surgeon say this to me. It has a lot to do with genetics and just what your knee is like.
Mm.
Some people have knees that have a good predisposition to replacement and coming back. Some people, they're never going to be the same, and it's just, there's nothing you can do about it. It's just the way their knee is.
Mm.
We've seen ACLs, because some players have been able to come back so effectively, the general public has this view that, ACL is now 6 to 12 month injury, bing, bang, boom.
Yeah.
It really isn't. It's still something where, maybe 20% of people, I'm just picking that number out of thin air, it might be 25, might be 30, might be 15, I don't know. But some people, a fair percentage of people, will not come back the same.
You know what started it, Pete? Was Wes Welker. Like, when Wes Welker came back, the fastest I'd ever seen anybody.
Well, Jerry Rice is the guy.
Oh, Jerry Rice. Yeah, Jerry Rice is the
Jerry Rice did it, like, in the same damn season.
It was like 6 months, 6 or 8 months. Yeah, it was Rice. It was Rice, and then you saw Welker, and then you saw others kind of follow suit.
Rice doesn't count because he's not a human being.
He's a freak, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. It was Jerry Rice. It was about 8 months. I wanna, maybe less than 8 months. It was crazy.
Jerry Rice played football like... I have to go look it up, but
he
it was
hurt
like
in OTAs, and then he was back by like before the playoffs or by the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean it's just it didn't make any sense, and I think if you could put Rice on sodium pentothal, he'd probably admit that he came back too soon.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, look, some people have, and this is just like it's not. This isn't a good genetics versus bad genetics thing. It's just sort of random chance. Not every knee joint is exactly the same. And, you know, some people just, the area where you fit the ligament in, it's just a little bit cleaner and you know, it works a little bit better. I mean, think of how amazing it is in the first place that we can replace anterior cruciate ligaments.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable that we can even do that.
Well, what they do now is so different. Like, when I had mine, they actually took my patella tendon and stretched it down and like as a replacement. It's like, you don't have that anymore. You're going to have extra of this.
I think sometimes they still do patella. I mean, they have options. And they have, I mean, cadavers are an option. There's a lot of different options. Most of the people I know had patella. And then, of course, usually they take it from the patella on the opposite leg, or at least they used to. Mm. And then you have multiple rehabs you need to do because you have to rehab the patella.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you go back. I remember when, if you go back to the early 90s, Alexei Kovalev, a Rangers hockey player, had
a
ACL.
Yeah.
And, you know, the surgeries were getting better then. But they, you know, that was when they would literally drill into your knee with a drill. Yep. I remember watching the surgery, not live, but they showed the actual surgery through the camera that the doctors see. And it was just like, oh my God, that's brutal.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, at that time, people were like, can you believe this technology? Imagine if Bernard King had had this 7 years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We look at the Kovalev technology like it's barbaric, you know, like he's the Theodoric Barber of York or something.
Yeah.
The stuff is getting better, but, you know, some people are not going to be the same.
But is Chubb a guy you worry about with that at all?
No, Chubb's a guy who's back and he looks great. What is he now predisposed to further injury? I don't know. It's hard to say. I'll tell you one thing. I love Dalvin Cook.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are really high on Dalvin Cook coming back, but there is that unknown 10 to 15%, whatever number you want to put on it, chance that he's not going to be the Dalvin Cook we know and love.
That would stink.
We're
just getting used to him, man. Like he come out flashing last year in his rookie
year.
Good
back. Yeah. Good back.
Yep. Great back. And in Minnesota, you got a good team around him, a good line, good offense. That team, look, they pooped themselves in the NFC Championship. But think about it, their third-string quarterback, you know, their top running back out. Yeah, kudos to them. You know, I hope he comes back and he comes back strong. I'd really like to see more of him and more of that offense in its totality.
You know, it was almost like with Minnesota that, like, they lost to the Saints. I mean, the Saints won that game, and then an absolute freak play switched the result.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if psychologically that was a weird thing for the Vikings. Like, in the back of their minds, they know they actually lost to the Saints, you know? Sports is weird that way.
I think Philly just snuck up on everyone, too. Like I wrote them off, and I know that, and I'm not the only one.
I was pretty much blown away that they beat the Vikings.
In Minnesota, with a Super Bowl in Minnesota on the line.
Well, it was in Philadelphia, but the Super Bowl, Minnesota's fighting for a chance to play the Super Bowl at home against Nick Foles, and they cough it up. So,
I know.
Poor Vikings fans, that's a rough one.
Yeah,
that's a really rough one.
And chalk it up to everyone underestimating what Philadelphia was all about, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, chalk it up to
absolutely.
That.
I have to admit, I was sort of like, I felt bad for Eagles fans because they were so into it, and I felt like, man, these people are going to get so let down. I feel bad for them because the Eagles deserved so much better. The Wentz thing was such a bad beat.
Yeah.
So then they ended up on a magic carpet ride and winning the Super Bowl. Anyway, it's a pretty amazing story. story.
The only thing I don't agree with you in that comment is that I don't feel bad for Philly fans about anything ever at all because they're barbarians.
I was going to say, is this through the Super Bowl lens? This is the booing Santa Claus thing?
The whole thing. I mean, you know.
The whole thing.
God. Every fan base has its scumbags. They just have a higher percentage. You know, so if you say, you know, on average, 0.01% of a fan base are a-holes, then Philadelphia, it's like 15% of their fan base is a-holes.
I don't know. I think some of it is definitely reputation. I think the reputation has snowballed.
Yes.
And I think any time an Eagles fan does something disgusting or whatever, it becomes news. So it becomes sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, sort of like any time someone uses a racial slur in Boston,
yeah,
people want to pretend like it's 1965
or
something.
That's a good point. Fair point.
You know, I think things get out of scale pretty easily. But you know, there's some truth to what you're saying because look, I root for a team that has a pretty high percentage of juvenile fans.
Yep. Yes, you do.
And look, I don't know that it's our fault. You know, if you rooted for the Jets, you'd find alternative forms of entertainment as well. Yeah, I think your original statement is the right one, which is every single fan base, without exception, has got jerks.
Yeah.
And if we want to pay attention to the jerks, we can make any fan base look bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Maybe Philly has just a little higher percentage.
Well, they booed Santa Claus. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that doesn't stay out of my dead horse Rolodex. All right, but let's roll down some other running backs. Any people that have caught your eye at the top and that we might be seeing, you know, today, you know, or in reviewing what we see today in the combine.
People listen to this podcast, they're going to have data on these running backs.
So, yeah,
you know, we're fighting with our hands tied behind our backs a little bit, but I'm not alone. You're going to hear a lot of people say this. I love this running back class. It's crazy deep. I mean, the ninth running back on my board is John Kelly, and I think John Kelly's an NFL starter. I really do. You know, and even when you go past Kelly, Rashad Penny, some people think Rashad Penny should be in the top three, you know. So it's, and you know, even past that, you know, Hines.
I was going to say Hines from NC State gets a lot of press, yeah.
Very interesting player. Darrell Williams, who, you know, no one's talking about him, but the only reason you don't know about him is because he was stuck behind Geis.
Right.
And before that, he was stuck behind Fournette. So there's some real talent in this class.
Does the skill set of the class in general, I know each player is different and each class is different, but the skill set needed in the NFL now for a running back, you know, pass protection, good hands, good feet in open space, versatility, can line up anywhere. Does the depth in this class match the current need in the NFL at the position?
Well, I mean, not all of it. And if you look at my rankings, I've downgraded the one-trick ponies, guys like Bo Scarborough.
Right.
You know, you'll see Scarborough high on some lists, but I'm downgrading him just for the reason that you said. Who's another good example? Jevion Franklin out of Western Michigan, I think in the past, might have been higher on some people's boards.
Yeah.
He's not very high on mine. What's another good example? Cameron Petway out of Auburn, I sort of like. But the answer to your question is yes, there are guys who have the skill sets to play in the forward-thinking NFL, you know, where the league's going versus where it is, however you want to phrase it.
Well, I think I think Scarborough is a good answer to that because A, he comes from Alabama, right? They're always so prominent, so it's a guy you're going to see a lot. It's a guy that the play-by-play and the commentary guys on Saturday are going to go crazy on. You're going to see him on the national stage. He fits the suit in terms of what a running back in everyone's mind is. But then you push him down a little bit because maybe that doesn't translate today.
A guy who I think is a specialist. He can be a closer for you. He maybe could be a short yardage back for you. He could be a guy if you really want to pound the football in a bad weather kind of game. He's a guy to have around. But, you know, I think in the end he's going to have a career that's sort of similar. I'm spacing on his name. Who's that big kid who came out of Boston College a couple years ago?
Willie Green?
No. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I forgot this guy's name. Really good player. He was, like, setting NCAA records for rushing. Huge dude.
There was Willie
crazy stiff arm like 3-4 years ago.
I know. I'm thinking of. I just had to go through my.
I can't believe I forgot this guy's name. Anyway,
it was Mike Cloud, Willie Green, and
no, you're going way too far back.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter. He played for the Giants. I think he's still on the Chargers roster.
Yeah, they just caught him last year.
What is wrong with me?
Yeah. Well, it's March.
We need to get a young person on this podcast.
It'll come to me. They just caught him last year. I remember. He was kind of hanging around in practice squads.
For some reason, Jason Williams is in my head, but
nah,
that's not it. But anyway, you know, it's
that kind of guy.
That kind of player.
That kind of guy.
See, now I'm upset. But anyway, let's talk about
remember that time we talked about those guys. And we like how about Lendell White? Is that a good one? Lendell White, is that a good pull?
It's a good comp, but yeah. Well, White was a better player. But anyway, yeah. If you keep him away from the Popeyes and the McDonald's,
yes, the Arches.
But the good guys in this class, I'm pretty high on this. On my board until you get, into like that sixth tier. Mm. Through tier five, I really like them. My personal sort of favorite from a value standpoint is John Kelly. I feel like he doesn't get enough love.
Tennessee.
And Jalen Samuels out of NC State, who technically at the combine is a tight end.
Hmm.
He's got Patriot skills.
I was going to say, if you're a tight end of the combine and you're in the running backs area, that's the first thing I thought of is like, oh, maybe that's a guy the Patriots will look at.
He's an exceedingly aware football
versatile
player. Plays super smart. I think he could be a lead running back. I really do. But if you want,
like
to
an H-back kind of thing.
Yeah, he could be sort of a hybrid player.
Yeah.
A little bit smaller than Aaron Hernandez, but he could maybe play an Aaron Hernandez-y kind of role.
Hmm.
I think this kid's a little bit more of a solid citizen. Well, we all are, but
Chiang Kai-shek is a more solid citizen.
Yeah. So, yeah, Jalen Samuels is. It's going to be really interesting to see how the NFL values him and where he gets drafted. If I were looking for a diverse power back who could do everything, he would be high on my list.
Cool.
So he's a guy, and I definitely think he has Patriot potential. But my seventh back, Ronald Jones, I mean, this guy has the ability to maybe be something special. And look, I probably have him lower than he should be. I sort of put Royce Freeman up at six to make a point because I think most people have Freeman way too low on their boards. And Kerryon Johnson out of Auburn's a really tough good running back. Everybody knows about Sony Michel.
Yeah.
I am maybe not as high on Michel as some people, but I really do like him. And Nick Chubb, I think, is universally underrated. I really do.
Well,
I think Nick Chubb is going to be if Nick Chubb stays healthy for the next 5 years, he's probably going to end up in round one of fantasy drafts at some point.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think so.
That's cool.
He's got to stay healthy. That part is, and certainly the potential injury issue could knock him down on some teams' boards. I don't know, but I think he's underrated in terms of his diversity. And at 230 odd pounds, I can't remember what his weigh-in was off the top of my head, but he is a violent runner. He is direct and to the point. He's exactly the kind of running back NFL teams love because he doesn't take a lot of chances. He generally gives you positive yardage. He finishes runs and he falls forward, and he can block. So, I think Chubb's a lead back somewhere, maybe as soon as this year. But that brings us to the problem with this running back class. It's that there's not enough, it's musical chairs. We've got, 12 to 15 really good running backs, and there's only going to be two or three chairs available for high-profile opportunity. That's going to be
teams that are really in need.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, somebody's going to get the Indianapolis gig. That'll be great. Somebody maybe will get the 49ers gig. That'll be great. Maybe the Giants decide to upgrade with a big back. But, the fact that most of these backs are going to go through the first round and will go somewhere in the second, the better teams are going to get opportunities to take these players.
Yeah.
And some of these big-name guys could end up stuck behind Gurley,
Yeah.
And, or David Johnson, or who knows.
Yeah.
And that'll be a buzzkill for us dynasty players.
That'd be smart for the Arizona to try to get somebody, just in case, Johnson takes a little bit more time,
Well, Johnson was a wrist, and he could have come back at the end of the year,
yeah.
So I think he's going to be good. I mean, the problem for Arizona is they lost their coach, and I think the coach had a lot to do with why that organization suddenly became
perennially.
Thank you very much. A viable team. I without Arians, I don't think that whole thing happened.
Yeah,
I
mean, they got a good defense. They're desperate in need of a quarterback, too.
The defense is starting to get hit too, and I don't know how much of that personnel is going to be there. So, Arizona's in trouble. They're in trouble because the Rams are on the rise. 49ers are on the rise. Seattle's good. They're going to get a lot of defensive talent back healthy next year.
Yeah.
And obviously they've got Wilson. They've got Pete Carroll. So Arizona looks like a potential doormat for a while.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, back to where they belong.
Unless they really get it going. I'm not in love with their GM, so.
Yeah. There's a lot of teams that you don't think of as cellar dwellers, that really have some holes to fill, and they are at the top of the list. And again, I think that, the Patriots are rock solid, but they got a lot of holes, man. And so this is a really interesting draft from a local perspective, from a national perspective in terms of the teams that have holes to fill, and it's a deep draft. So I think it's one that's worth kind of digging into a little bit. I wanted to get off running backs if you're interested. I know that article's been sitting up there a couple days.
You're driving. Where are we going?
Well, receivers are up today, but before we do, let's talk QB a little bit. We got a few minutes, and all we've heard, and you and I were talking about this and preaching about it during our show all year long, is that it's a good quarterback class. When the Garoppolo trade happened, it's a good quarterback class. They got another second-round pick. People don't think they got enough, but trust me, it's a good class. So here we are. It's the combine, and this class is in front of us. The names that kind of keep popping up in terms of the Patriots are Luke Falk and Kyle LaLeta. Now, I don't know how much film work you've done yet in terms of diving into the QBs, but
I'm definitely going to do more. But I've watched all these guys enough to have initial opinions. I've watched the top four or five guys quite a bit.
I would think you've seen Mayfield and those guys.
I'm very big on Darnold and Mayfield.
Yeah,
I like Rosen quite a bit, and I'm a fairly big fan of Lamar Jackson as well. You want to say it's not a race thing, but then you have all these teams wanting to turn him into a receiver, and you just wonder what are these people thinking?
Mm.
This kid is so talented. He throws a decent ball. I'm not in love with his throwing motion. He's got a little bit of a slurve to his throwing motion. It's not ideal, but I don't think it's anywhere near as problematic as a lot of people want to make it out to be.
It's not like a Tebow screwball that he used to throw.
Yeah, no, not like that. It's more like Randall Cunningham.
Okay, kind of threw it like a golf ball,
if you will, but not as long as Cunningham.
Yeah.
But Lamar Jackson, when you look at, and by the way, I watched all the available films so far, and I will definitely go through all his games at least one more time. Mm-hmm. This isn't my final take on him, but I personally have been impressed with the way he sees a defense. I don't think he's hurting in that regard. I think his footwork really is the thing I would want to work on the most. I feel like too often he uses a really narrow base, and I'd like to see him widen that base a little bit. And as I say in the article, and Coach sort of talked to me about this, if he can find, even if you can't find the perfect release point for him, you just want to get him to the point where he's consistent with whatever release point he's using. If you can get his release point consistent, and if you can get his feet cleaned up, I don't know. He looks like an awful talented player to me. I mean, if Geno Smith is the second-round pick in the NFL, this kid's got to go higher than that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught Geno Smith last week, but he was talking about how he's been studying the whole flat Earth concept.
Oh, boy.
Apparently he's trying to sort of defend Kyrie and Gino.
It's not helping
Gino.
Your cause, man.
Gino.
It's not helping your cause.
His agent must have just been like, face calm.
It's just
unbelievable stuff.
I don't even know what to say. I don't know how to address that.
What did the Wicked Witch say? What a world. Yeah. What a world.
I mean.
It's madness, man. So suffice to say, Gino is what we call a low-information voter.
Yes.
To me, the top seven guys on the board all make sense for the Patriots. You know, maybe with the exception of Josh Allen, if they don't think he's fixable.
But can they get any of those guys? Can they get
Luke Falk? I don't see any reason why they can't get Luke Falk.
That's a round two guy. I'm thinking.
Right? Yeah. No, Luke Falk, I would think would be a round two or even round three guy. I mean, I don't know. See, the one thing that's interesting about this draft, and we'll know more when we get there. But it's a pretty deep free agent class, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of these teams where everybody's saying quarterback need, some of these teams are going to sign quarterbacks before the draft, and that may change their urgency level, right? So, you know, I mean, Cousins is going to take the need right off the board for one team. They're not going to draft a quarterback.
Right.
They just signed, you know, the $200 million man or whatever it's going to be.
You just walked exactly where I wanted you to walk. Because I had a thought this week.
Yeah.
You know, Minnesota has a lot of quarterbacks.
Yeah. Well, the Keenum and Bridgewater technically are going to be free agents.
I was going to say, if you can't, if the Patriots can't kind of get, just in terms of positioning, like you and I always talk about in fantasy, sometimes it's just the way the draft falls to you. And you've got your plan, and you plan your work, but you can't always work your plan. You know what I mean? And just in terms of the way the draft falls. Let's say the draft doesn't fall the way the Patriots want, and they can't get Luke Falk, and you know they don't feel right about Kyle LaLeta or whomever else it is, and they don't want to move
Mike
up.
White, whatever.
Yeah, they don't want to fall up for this guy. What's wrong with taking a project look at Teddy Bridgewater?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater is not a project. Teddy Bridgewater can play. The question is Teddy Bridgewater still Teddy Bridgewater?
That's why I'm thinking in that term, because
right.
the injuries, right? So
right.
He, to me, is an intriguing guy because he showed a lot.
You know how much I love Bridgewater.
I know. He was like, you know.
It would break my little green heart if he went to the Patriots.
I know. But, like, I remember when that class was coming out, and he was, you know, when at Rotobaum, when you did the quarterback rankings, you know, and Garoppolo's in that
class. We really liked that class.
Right. And Bridgewater.
Bortles was the only guy we didn't like.
Yeah, and there was that's right. Yeah, Bortles was the guy you didn't like, and then you know I think Manziel was in that class too.
And look, let's not get too much into Manziel, but I'll defend my football take on Manziel till the cows come home. You know, we just didn't realize he was a junkie.
Right. Yeah, he didn't know.
You know, and he's sober again, and I guess he's bipolar. So you know, hopefully he gets his life on track.
Yeah. But I remember
but that class when you look at it. Yeah, I mean Derek Carr, Bridgewater,
right.
Jimmy Garoppolo, good quarterbacks,
great quarterback class. So that's the 2014 class, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember the quarterback that you had on the image of at Rotobaum was actually Bridgewater, and I was like, huh, that's interesting, knowing that. You know, there's a lot of talk about Derek Carr, and there was Manziel. The whole offseason was about him, and Bortles was the big, he was the eventual number one pick quarterback.
Johnny and Teddy and Jimmy were my guys in that class.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
those are my guys.
So Bridgewater's, but he's always been interesting to me. And then the rookie year, you know, he showed a little bit, you know, and there's something there. And I'm thinking with the injury issues, I'm wondering if he kind of takes a step back in terms of the 32-team perception, and he actually can be a project kind of player, which would be
well, I don't
what,
think,
what a catch you know, for the Patriots.
Again, he's definitely not a project, and look, they actually...
Or someone they can be patient with, or he can be
patient.
Right,
you know? But, you know, he was active at points last year before they were able to activate Bradford. Now, how willing were they to let Bridgewater go out there? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how real that was. That was
he never did.
Right.
But, you know, it sure sounded at one point like Zimmer wanted to make the move. Like he wanted to go to Bridgewater, but Keenum kept having good games,
yeah.
and they just couldn't ever do it. You know, I'd love to get Zimmer on a sodium pentothal drip. And make him tell me the truth, you know. Is Teddy Bridgewater Teddy Bridgewater anymore? I don't think there's any way you can know. But here to answer your question, if he doesn't get a big contract in free agency, if nobody's able to commit to him, it'd be a tremendous move for the Patriots to slide him in behind Brady, along with whatever rookie they come up with or Hoyer. And, you know, Bridgewater, there's multiple scenarios on Bridgewater. Scenario A, he's never going to be the same, and he's never going to do anything. Scenario B, he's ready right now. Scenario C, he's going to continue to get better and better.
Yeah.
I don't know which one is the one. But, you know, two out of three of those aren't so bad. So he would be really typical Patriots in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I was just thinking of it like earlier this week. I'm like, you know what? That might be a really sneaky get for them.
Well, and that goes to what I'm saying about this whole thing. It's a deep free. It's a deep pool of talent with the draft, but it's also a deep free agent class. So, in typical Patriot fashion, if they lay back and wait for the value, they will get some value. The one difference here is we're talking about the quarterback position, and we're talking about them eventually needing to play someone, you know, for real as the guy. You know, Bridgewater profiles someone who could do that.
Mm. Yeah,
so
I would agree. Give me,
I wouldn't be opposed to my team going after Teddy. You know, the problem is, until we actually see Bridgewater playing like Bridgewater, you need plan B.
Yeah, you're right. You have to. He doesn't come without a contingency plan, but it's just
right.
he's an interesting
but he's not the only guy. I mean, obviously Keenum's out there. I mean, some teams may think Nick Foles is an option if they want to, you know, overpay for something that I think is safe to say has peaked. Yeah. AJ McCarron, I think, is probably an NFL starter.
Yeah.
He doesn't, you
should
know,
have been starting for the Browns.
Sexy.
Should have been starting for the Browns last year.
He could be.
Yeah.
He could be. You know, he could end up starting for him next year, for all we know.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if I'm the Browns, I'm taking a quarterback first, and I'm not messing around.
Yeah, they have to.
That's what I'm doing if I'm the Browns. But, you know, the Browns, you know, freaking Browns. Let's not even get into the Browns.
They're brown. I mean,
they're a black hole. They're
brown for a reason.
Oh my gosh, they're infuriating.
We gotta wrap it up, but I do want to throw one topic out. I wanted you to do like a lightning round player. I'm gonna give you a second to kind of think about it a little bit.
Okay.
Either QB, running back.
But hopefully, we can podcast maybe once or twice next week because we've got a lot of stuff to cover.
There's a ton. I really want to pick your brain. I want the audience to get in there and understand who's out there and what it means to their fantasy drafts. But one guy, I want to talk about this one fella, receiver, and the reason I'm going to bring him up is I actually saw one of the HBO sports documentaries that we have Brian Gumbel and that whole group of people, and they did a documentary on a sports dad who's out there that they're kind of like saying is like LeVar Ball like in terms of the plan, you know, or Earl Woods or LeVar Ball like the plan that he had in place for the next generation in his family, and it's the St. Brown family, and at the top of your list is Equanimeous St. Brown. I said it there for you, from Notre Dame. But it was a fascinating documentary, and from what I can see, and I didn't do like the film study that you've done, but this kid and his brothers, boy, do they have their heads on straight. So if you're looking for someone who can kind of, that has discipline, that has strength, that that is coachable, man. I mean, I don't know the whole class yet, and I'm nowhere near where you are in terms of the study, but what I just saw in terms of what this kid can process to get to where he is, he speaks like eight languages, and man, he's talented. So what you saw on the field from him, I'd be really interested to know.
Yeah, I mean, the rankings I have really are based almost solely on what I've seen on the field.
Yep.
If they weren't, I would move Antonio Callaway even further down my board than
right,
he is.
Right, because he's a gas.
He's another one where he's sort of high as an attention getter.
Yep.
I mean, there's a chance he won't even be drafted. You know, he might be in the process as we speak of not impressing people, you know.
Yeah, so, he's got a rap sheet, man.
Oh, Lord, he messed up, okay?
Yep.
You know, now, I root for all these guys to get their acts back together.
Sure.
You know, I was not a perfect 20-year-old. I don't think these guys necessarily need to be, but he's a kid who's gotten pretty far off the reservation, and he's going to need to do sort of a little bit extra to get himself in the, you know, in the conversation. Now, if he does get himself onto a football field for some team, I think he can do great things. You know, we'll see. As far as St. Brown goes, you know, he's at the top of my second tier. But, you know, he could easily be number seven on my board as number two. That tier is very tight. I like all the receivers in there, and I'm going to keep grinding on these guys, and they will move around a little bit between now and the draft. But, look, he's long, he's fast, he's strong. As you say, he's smart. You know, he's got a little perspective on life.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes the NFL doesn't like that, by the way.
That's true. Look at, like, Ricky Williams, for instance, you know, like, so. Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I saw yesterday that they asked Bo Scarborough, what's the weirdest question you've had so far? Apparently, the Browns asked him if he thought God was an Auburn fan. You know, so Cleveland, once again, way to ask the important question.
Way to get to the bottom of it, yeah.
Right, and I guess he said, no, I do not. I would have said I reject the premise of the question. I would have really ticked him off. I don't know. I can't tell you if his mental makeup is something that teams will like or not like. It's hard to say. Mm. But he's big, he's fast, he's got talent, and he's young.
Yes,
and
he is. And a big program, too. You don't get bigger than Notre Dame, you know, so.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, he's definitely a guy who I think in this class, he sort of stands out because there's not a lot of high-end talent in this class. So when I see decent film from a guy with high-end talent, he moves up the board very fast. Mm. That's why Brown's at the top. But you know what? It's really tough to tell with this class. It wouldn't shock me if Brown went in the fourth round, you know? It wouldn't blow me away. I think other than Ridley, I'm interested to see if any of these receivers go in the first round. My guess would be that none of them do.
We've had so many great young receivers in the last few years in these drafts.
Yeah, they've been spoiled.
Yeah, and I just don't know how much need there is. There's always need, but like...
No, you're absolutely right. It's a lot like the running back position, where, you know, there's not a lot of jobs available. You know, there's some teams that need help, but not as many as you would normally think.
And people in New England forget. You know, you forget you get Malcolm Mitchell coming back, too. You know,
right.
He's a nice little player. So
that's in my article this morning. I'm like, you know, until Amendola signs somewhere else, to me, he's a Patriot. So to me, I'm looking at the Patriots, and I've got six receivers locked in. You know, Dorsett's been in the system for a year. He's more likely to do better in year two than year one. Mitchell's been around. He knows the system. Edelman and Amendola obviously know the system backwards, forwards, upside down.
Hogan
is trustworthy. You know, Cooks, you know, as I said in the article this morning, I don't, you know, the idea that the Patriots are cutting Cooks, I think is crazy.
I'm with you. The surface with him. We scratched the surface.
Right. I mean, you know, we all remember the Aaron Dobson years where there wasn't enough receiving talent around. This is very much the opposite of that. They've got guys who work in the system. They've got guys that the quarterback trusts. They've got speed. They've got route runners. You know, with the exception of having a real long body, they've got it all.
Yep.
So,
no doubt.
Yeah, to me, the Patriot receivers, it ain't broke, so don't fix it kind of thing.
Yeah, this is a sideline viewing for Patriots fans in this class, I think, but it could be fun for fantasy football because it's going to be all about the landing spot. Like, you might look at rankings and like, oh, this guy was the seventh ranked or the ninth ranked, but if he lands in the right spot, that's going to be the guy you're going to want to get.
Yeah, no, Sigmund Bloom said it. He responded to one of my tweets yesterday saying landing spot is going to help sort this out. He's 100% right.
Yep.
I mean, the reason... And so the logical response to that is, well, Pete, why are you going to spend the next two months racking your head against the wall? The answer is because I want to know these receivers inside and out so I can tell what a good landing spot is.
Yeah.
For me, it's just important to really know these players as well as I can because when they change teams, when they get into free agency, I want to know what a good fit is. So that's what I'm really doing. The pre-draft rankings aren't that important because really the NFL is going to rank these guys for us whether we like it or not.
Yep.
Draft capital outweighs so many other things. You know, when a team takes a guy in the second or third round, they're putting their weight behind that player. So, you know, if you don't think the guy can play, well, that's fine. But if a team goes high on him, he's going to get more opportunity than the guys taken later, you know?
No doubt.
Sometimes you have a team like the Jets who takes a bunch of bums, and you know they take a couple bums in the fourth round, and they take a Nunwa in the sixth round. But for the
great
most
play.
Part,
yeah, great pick.
Yeah, way to go, Jets. But you know, for the most part, the draft position is going to tell you a very big part of the story, and you need to respect it. You know, you think a guy's a third round talent and he goes undrafted, you need to take that pill and eat it and move on.
Yep. Yeah.
You know.
All right. So tell our guys what's coming next out of you on WEI.
We're going to put up a little tight end article tomorrow morning before the tight ends work out, so you can look for that. And then next week, hopefully, you and I can do multiple podcasts.
Yep.
To pick up the pieces of the combine and talk about who flashed and any changes on our board and stuff like that. You'll be seeing some articles from me in the coming weeks.
Awesome.
I'm planning on maybe doing a best ball article.
Cool.
And we'll be doing some articles on the rookie class for dynasty drafts, that kind of stuff. So
awesome.
It'll be an active off season.
All right, cool. So we're going to be more from Jim and Pete next week on the podcast. Plenty more from Pete coming as soon as, but it sounds like this weekend. And finally, one little last thing I want to throw out there is a great work friend and someone who I've actually become friends with has left WEEI, as everybody knows, long since by now, Michael Hawley. I just want to give a shout out to him as someone who knows him and gotten to know him, and you got to know him as well and did some events with him. Just a dynamite guy, and wish him nothing but the best. And first class all the way, always had a yes, happy, friendly, willing attitude. If he didn't want to do something, there was a reason for it, and he was always open to talking things through. Just a great guy, and I wish him nothing but the best at NBC Sports TV, and I think he'll be back in some form here. That's my prediction. I don't know anything. I didn't talk to him about it. It's just a gut feeling. Because this place,
I hope you're right, because he's a darn good writer, and he's a good broadcaster, but as you say, he's a really great guy.
He's a dynamite guy. Good guy to have around. So wish Michael all the best. And that's it, man. So let's you and I catch up after the combine and give the people what they want.
All right, buddy.
All right,
sounds
man.
Good.
See ya.